So you see the shadow this week that touches on some of the sugyas that we're learning in Kol HaBoker. So I figured I couldn't pass up the opportunity. So we'll try not to be repetitive, not the exact same thing we learn in Kol HaBoker, but it's at least in Yana Diyoma a little bit. So we'll try to flesh out the shadow a little bit more. So the shadow actually came to me from a group of NCS wires who are having a Shabbaton. So I got all nervous because I thought that the shadow was relevant for this Shabbos. I figured I better paskin it right away. Then they told me it's relevant for like 6 weeks from now. So I said, okay, we got time to think about it, but we'll try to work out the details of the shadow right now. The shadow was as follows. They're planning in a Shabbaton in this, that was some kind of a campground. And they were told that the campground was totally surrounded by walls, by fences. So that's a very, very good area. Something is completely surrounded by fences. The only problem is there's an opening in the fence, opening in the gate, and that's in order for cars to come in and out. So the question they wanted to know is how in the world did it go about making a, quote-unquote, building an eruv? How do you fix this up? Is it a problem in the first place, the fact that there's a little bit of a breach in the wall? And if there is, what possibilities do exist for them? So my first question I asked them was, well, is anybody there right now I can talk to measure out for me exactly how big it is, what the dimensions are, what the possibilities of fixing it up are? So they said that it's in the middle of Texas somewhere. So I said, okay, so next time you get somebody there, before that Shabbos, try to send me some pictures and we'll see if we can finalize what the Shaila is. So I'll try to give you just a little bit of background, a little bit of Rashi Prakim, because the truth is it's a fairly common Shaila. The Shaila happens in a lot of different scenarios as well, in backyards, other places where they don't air. Well, that's going to be a whole other question. Assuming that if they're all the same group, they're all eating this and the same food, then there's not going to be any. If you have different groups living there, then you would have a problem. So the Sugya begins with almost the ABCs of Hilchos Eruvin. It's a Mishnah, and the first Brachim is Eruvin and Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis. So the Mishnah describes, I guess, what we would call almost a strange way of making an Eruv, but all the principles, all the basic principles of Hilchos Eruvin are discussed and elaborated upon in this description of the strange scenario. The Mishnah describes, Shiyoish HaChantza Mavika, if you have a caravan which is traveling, we spoke a little bit about those caravans that are traveling in Kol HaBoker also by the wells, but if you have a caravan that's traveling, and they camped out in a bika. They camped out in the middle of a bunch of fields somewhere. So, i.e., it's not in the middle of civilization, so there are no walls around it. So we have a problem. So how in the world are they going to function? Are they going to be able to carry on Shabbos? So the Mishnah says, V'kifua klei behema, and they surround the area where they are with the different vessels, the different things that the animals use. So they pile up saddles on top of each other. They pile up packages on top of each other. The whole area is surrounded by these different haphazard structures that, lo and behold, happen to make up an eruv. So metalsim besocha. So the Mishnah says you can carry, even though it's not an officially, you know, a cement wall, a brick wall, doesn't matter. As long as the height of all these caves, the height of all these utensils are more than 10 tefachim, as we learned in Kol HaBoker, there's a halach Moshe Mesinai that the bare minimum of a wall, mechitzah for both the Shabbos and Sukkah, is 10 tefachim. So as long as the walls are 10 tefachim, so then you've created a Rishus HaYochid. Once you've created a Rishus HaYochid, then it's mutar l'chetchila to carry there. However, the Mishnah says, below you, piritzos yaseiros al habinyon. However, you have to be careful that when you make this kind of a surrounding with all these different, you know, saddles and boxes and piles and all kind of stuff, so you're going to have some breaks, you're going to have some breaches. So the Mishnah says you have to be careful that you have more standing than piritzos. You have what's called omen rubel aparot. You have more of a wall than you have piritzos. So if you have an area, let's say, for example, you have 20 feet straight of wall, and then a break of a couple of feet, and then another 10 feet of wall, then another break of a couple of feet. As long as you tally up the whole thing, and it's omen rubel aparot, that's okay. That's the first clause. The basic principle of the Chosei Ervin is that the mechitza has to be more standing than it is in breach. Then the Mishnah says, rule number two is, called piritzos shekeetza amos muteres, v'pnei shekepesach, yasa mikarosa.
What if you have a period? So you have one of these small breaches, which again is not the majority of the wall, but it's significantly large. It's more than 10 amos, so then you have a problem. That's what the Mishnah tells us. There are two basic criteria to construct a mechitza on Shabbos. Number one, it has to be omed rubel aparut. And number two, each of the pirtzos has to be less than 10 amos. Where did that come from? What's it based on? So the Mishnah says that they should get Pesach, because as long as the pirtzos is up until 10 amos, including 10 amos, then we can just ignore it and say, that's not a break, that's not a breach, that's an opening, that's a doorway. My own house is a doorway. Every place has a door. You have to have a door, so you can't get inside. So a small break up until the point of 10 amos, we won't call it a breach, we won't call it a pirtz, we'll call it a Pesach, and that's not going to disqualify the mechitza. Once it reaches past the point of 10 amos, that is going to be a problem. So these are the two basic halachas that govern every eruv. So if that's the case, then we have two questions to ask ourselves in terms of encircling this campground. We have to ask ourselves, well, is it omed rule apart? So the answer is clear, it's 99% omed. The problem is the pirtz there more than 10 amos or is it less than 10 amos? That was the first question that I asked them to measure, assuming they get something down there to measure. Is it more than 10 amos or less than 10 amos? So the answer is more than 10 amos. Now, we suspect it is more than 10 amos. Generally speaking, they make the openings pretty large when you have a truck get in, a bus get in. So it's probably more than 10 amos. And again, even how you measure an amos, a big machlokes is a poskim. So an amos is somewhere between 1.5 to 2 feet. So you're talking about 10 amos is somewhere, you know, in the range of 10 times that. So if it's less than 10 amos, that's great. It doesn't disqualify the Erev, and everything's put kashla chachila. If it's more than 10 amos, then you're going to have a problem. So where did these dinim come from? The two dinim that the Mishnah speaks about. You need omer v'la parts, and none of the parts to be less than 10 amos. Where does that come from?
What if the area is extremely small to begin with? It's only 8 by 8 amos. And then mean the entire section is...
No, because you have to have omer v'la parts. Each wall has to be omer v'la parts.
Each wall.
Pashas, each wall has to be omed rule apart. And then, once you have pirtzos, you can't have pirtzos in more than 10 amos. So where do these dinim come from? So the Gemara begins by telling us, Itmar, the following discussion, parts killing me. What if you have exactly 50-50? A guy built his wall perfect, 50 standing and 50 in, with 50 that's open. So a papa, a mutter, a shuma also. So machlekes, the lady, I'm a rebbe, a papa, a whether that mechita is acceptable or not. What in the world does that machlokes depend upon? So a papa amar mutter. A papa says it's mutter. Why? Hachi agmerei rachamana lemoisha lo tifro teruba. The Rapapa invokes the phrase of gamri rachamana lemoisha, which is a phrase that's reserved pashas for halacha Moshe Sinai. That was a tradition that was told to Moshe Ben at Har Sinai. Lo tifro teruba. Make sure that you don't have pierces of robe. In other words, the halacha Moshe Sinai of omer rubel aparetz was never really said that you need omed rubel aparetz. The halacha Moshe Sinai was said that a pirtza, yoso omed, ruins the mechitza. If Rabbi Yeshua says no, if it's 50-50, that's a problem. Why? That the halacha Moshe Sinai was not that you can't have a pirtza of 50-51, but the halacha Moshe Sinai was actively, positively, that you have to have an omed of more than 50%. So everybody agrees in this sugi that there was halacha Moshe Sinai in terms of mechitzos. Everyone agrees that there's something to do with majority up versus majority down. It's unclear as to the nuances what the details of that halacha Moshe Sinai were. But the halacha Moshe Sinai said in a positive phrase that make sure you have 51% standing, therefore 50% would be no good. Or was the halacha Moshe Sinai said in the negative sense, make sure you don't have 51% breach, i.e. If it's 50% standing, 50% broken, it would be okay. So a very, very detailed machlekes amarayim about what the nuances of that halacha Moshe Sinai were. But everybody agrees it's halacha Moshe Sinai. That wasn't the question. You have to come back to Kolobot to see that there are some Rishonim who took this Gemara a little bit differently, but the Pashas in the Sugya is that this is part of the Halacha Sinai of Mechitzas, Nemar L'Moshe Sinai. The Gemara says in Erev and Brachas that the Hilchos Mechitzas were all set to Moshe Ben and Har Sinai. This is one of the details of Hilchos Mechitzas that it has to be either 50, 51, whatever the precise numbers are all about. But the Gemara only explains the source of the din of Omer Brul Aparetz. The Gemara never explains the notion of Pirtz of Ten Amos. How do you know that a pirtz of 10 amos is no good? So the Gemara in Beis and Erevin shows us that after 10 amos, it's called a pirtz. It's not called a Pesach anymore. The Gemara brings it right from the doorway of the Heichal. The door of the Heichal was still called a Pesach, even though it was exactly 10 amos. But if it would have been more than 10 amos, that would have been a problem. So I understand the Metzius, the facts on the ground are that architecturally more than 10 amos is a pirtz, but Menonimili, where does it say, where was the halakha Moshe Sinai that 10 amos, more than 10 amos, has a problem? So that was a big machlokes acharonim. So some acharonim said that must have also been halakha Moshe Sinai, that all included in that statement of the Gemara, mechitzas halakha Moshe Sinai, you have to have mechitza 10 tefachim to all, that was halakha Moshe Sinai. Some of the dinim of love with halakha Moshe Sinai, kurasik, tofidakum, all the things we learned about in Kol HaBoker, these are all halakha Moshe Sinai. The din that you need 50 or 51% was halakha Moshe Sinai. And guess what? Some acharonim say the fact that a break of more than 10 amos disqualifies the mechitza, that is also halacha Moshe Mitzinai. So according to one group of acharonim, they were dealing with a real din deraisa. But many other acharonim, including the Chazanish, said that that's not correct. That the Gemara never tells us that halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Never does it say in all of the 105 lamas of Erevin that there was a halacha Moshe Mitzinai of more than 10 amos disqualifying mechitza. Says the Chazanish, the din min haTorah is that you follow Rov. The din min deraisa is, as long as you have a Rov omed, Omen Ruvel Aparts, however you define it, 50, 51, whatever you think the numbers are, that is the Kar Haki Agmar Rechman LaMoshe. The fact that appearance of 10 Hamas disqualifies the Mechitza, that is only a Dimid Ravon, it's not a Din Deraisa. For us, it doesn't make that much of a difference. It makes differences in other areas of Echazerivan, but for our Shaila, it does make the slightest bit of difference, because I want to carry in this campground, so I have to make sure that it meets the criteria both Deraisa and the Rabbanan. LaMoshe, the Mishnah says, in Erevan Daf Tezvav, and if you surround an area with walls and you have a pirza of more than 10 amos, that's a problem. So it disqualifies the entire mechitza. So we have a problem. So no matter how you slice it, whether we have a problem, theory of deraisa, theory of derabana, it doesn't matter what you call the problem definitely exists. You have a pirza of 10 amos. So is there any mechanism that's available in us in halacha to rectify this problem? Any solution that we have to get around this issue of a pirza of 10 amos? So in the next of the Mamakamos, the Mishnah, in Masechet Erevin, that Beizim and Aleph, literally the opening Mishnah of Masechet Erevin, talks about the following. Mavli shu gavol lemalem esrim ami yamayit, rabbi yudam eino tzorich. The Mishnah is talking about a mavli. A mavli literally is an alleyway. And to learn the first part of Erevin, so you realize right away there are different kinds of alleyways. It was called a mavli sosom and a mavli mefulosh. A mavli sosom means it's closed off on three walls. There's three walls back to the alleyway, the two sides of the alleyways, in the back of the alleyway is a wall of the chatzah, a wall of the courtyards that are surrounding it, but it's open entirely into the street. That's what's called the mavi sosom. So the three quarters closed off, and the fourth side is open. The mavi mefulosh means that it's open on both sides. So this mishnah happens to be talking about a mavi sosom. The opening sugi in Erevin is talking about a mavi sosom. You have an area that's surrounded with three walls, so you're still not allowed to carry there. Even though min haTorah you're allowed to carry there, but min derabanan you're not allowed to carry there until you do something to the fourth wall. You need not fix up the fourth wall entirely. You don't have to build an entire mechitz on the fourth wall. You don't even have to build the mechitz on rove of the fourth wall. You have to do some token tikkun to the fourth wall in order to carry there lechetchila. The Mishnah tells us in Masechet Erevin that there are two choices of what you can do. One of the choices is you can put up a pole, it's called the lechi, and the other choice is you can put up a korek, put up a beam across the top. Either one of those two will solve the problem. So the Mishnah starts off Erevin Dabeis, assuming that we figured out what a Mavi Sosom is, and assuming that we figured out that you can't carry the Mavi Sosom, and assuming that we figured out that you have to put a Korah up to fix the Mavi Sosom, now the Mishnah is starting off, but you have to hold those assumptions, which you only figure out as you continue the Masech. That's always strange. How did we figure all that out on the base? I guess you still need a Rebbe for that. But when you know all that information, then you can read the first Mishnah, and you realize that Korah has to be situated in a certain height, certain minimum height, close to the floor of the mavli. How high up is the korah going to be that's still acceptable? So the Mishnah says, if it's long, it's within 20 amos. If it's more than 20 amos tall, more than 20 amos above the floor of the mavli, then you have a problem. Then you have to lower it. Why is that? We learned the similar halacha. And when you have a schach that's more than 20 amos, according to one opinion, it's no good because you can't see the schach anymore. So it's over here, you can't see the korah, you can't see the korah, that's going to be a problem. So the Mishnah tells us that if you have a mavi that's too tall, you have a problem, you have to fix it. And Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold that it's okay. You can leave the mavi the way it is. But that's not even our topic. Our topic is the next half of the Mishnah. What if the width of the mavi is more than 10 amos? Well, here the Mishnah tells us that all the tikkunim in the world aren't going to help. You're going to put up a lechi, garnished. You're going to put up a korah, nothing doing. Why? Because you have a pirza. Once you have something that's more than 10 amas, a 10 ama break in a wall is not negotiable. You cannot just stop, walk away and say, well, it's okay, I have three full walls and I have a lech and a kaira. nothing doing. If you have a pirtza, and the halacha defines a pirtza as being more than 10 amas, there's nothing you can do to solve that problem. Almost nothing you can do. So the Mishnah tells us what you can do. Says the Mishnah, v'im yesh lo tzuras ha-pesach, af ha-pishu rocham yasir amas ein tzorach l'mayed. The Mishnah says we could breathe a sigh of relief that you don't have to mamish build a wall there. All you have to do across the opening of the mavi, which is more than 10 amas, which the way it is not acceptable. You have to throw up a tzuras ha-pesach there. A tzuras ha-pesach means you take a pole, and you take a wire and throw it across the top. So we spoke a little bit about it this morning. That's called the tzuras ha-pesach. And tzuras ha-pesach solves the world's problems. It's even going to work even if the opening is more than 10 amos. Ein tzorach l'mayit, then there's nothing you have to do, and shalom Yisrael. So the easiest solution to big pirtzes is put up tzuras ha-pesach. That's exactly what we do. We do that all. Not only do we put up tzuras ha-pesach for pirtzes, we build our entire eruv based on tzuras ha-pesach. 99% of the eruv in the world today are based on tzuras ha-pesach, including our very own eruv here. Basically, we have all of Teaneck and Burgerfield and Milford and Dumont and you know where else it's going these days, into Pagoda also. So you have an area that's completely surrounded with tzuras ha-pesach. We have the tzuras ha-pesach, the Baruch Hashem for the telephone poles. They're already self-built tzuras ha-pesach. There's a pole, and there's a pole, and there's a wire. The only problem is that sometimes the wire runs on top of the pole, and sometimes the wire runs on the sides of the pole. So when the wire is run on the top of the pole, we don't have to do anything. We can just say, Baruch Hashem, that the non-Jewish telephone company built us a beautiful Erev. But the problem is they didn't finish the job. That when they half the poles, for whatever technical reasons, don't always run across the top. Sometimes the wires run across the side. And that's a big problem. Because the Gemara Neirvin says that if you have a wire that runs across the side, it's no good. So what do we do? So what we do is we build our own poles. What do we don't literally make poles, but we make our own strips of wood or strips of plastic or something and nail them into the side of the telephone pole and have it go all the way up to the wire or at least underneath the wire, and that's a new tzuras ha-pesach. So basically what we do is either we use the pre-existing telephone poles if they're made properly, which some of them are, or we innovate and we build our own tzuras ha-pesach connected to the telephone poles rather than walking around town and banging poles into the ground. So the poles of Baruch Hashem for the most part already there. So that principle of tzuras ha-pesach is a very, very handy principle, and this solves the world's problems. So my initial reaction to the person who called me was, what's the big deal? Even if the break is more than 10 amos, just put up a tzuras ha-pesach. Go there on a Friday and take a pole, throw a wire across the top, and inshallah myself. So easier said than done. They're going to get there 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, they start building poles, start maishalach, and then the campground is going to tell them that it's not safe, and they're going to tell them that they have to have the opening has to be available for emergency things to come in. They go, oh, chagad, they're going to tell them why maybe it's going to be a problem. So I said, okay, so that's the best case scenario, let's build the tzuras ha-pesach. But if for whatever reason we can't build the tzuras ha-pesach, is there any other way to salvage this situation? So they were describing to me what that opening is. So they said to me that opening is not always open. It's open during the day, and it closed at night. How is it closed? It has a gate to it. It has an automatic gate to it. So half the time, the gate is closed. I said, that's wonderful. As long as the gate is closed, you can carry there. So when is it closed? Between 11 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock in the morning. That's great. So everyone can carry it because it's closed at night. So in the daytime, when they want to carry it, it's going to be open. So maybe we were thinking about Lom de Shavuot. Maybe we could do is, maybe we can have the gate closed right when Shabbos starts. So that way, Shabbos will start the Heter, and then the goyim will open up the gate at a later point, and maybe that would be all right. Maybe we should say Shabbos Hov Hutra Hutra. Once Shabbos was Mutter, so it remains Mutter for the duration of Shabbos. So the Gemara in Erevin, the Mishnah in Erevin does have such a principle when it comes to an Erev Chatzeros. The din is that, let's say I made an Erev Chatzeros, and somebody ate the Erev Chatzeros during the course of the day. So that's perfectly okay. That doesn't matter. As long as the Erev was intact when Shabbos began, so that's fine. I remember one time when we were in the Heights, years ago, before there was any Erev whatsoever, so we just had a small Erev in the building, just an Erev Chateris in the building. So the din is that the Erev Chateris has to be accessible. Everyone has to know where it is. It has to be accessible to everybody. So one Shabbos, the fellow who had made the Erev Chateris in the building had gone away for Shabbos, and he was supposed to leave a key. We didn't have the key. Bottom line is, we realized 5 minutes before Shabbos that there was no one who had access to the apartment, so that threw into question the validity of the entire Erev Chateris. So I said, what's the big deal? So make another Erev Chateris. So we're so used to making Erev Chateris with box of matzahs. Not everyone has a box of matzahs around the house. So the reason why we make them with a box of matzahs is because that way we don't have to bother making it every week, because it doesn't get stale. Like challah, by next week it will be stale. So I said, so this Shabbos we'll make Erev Chateris with a couple of challahs. So we took a couple of challahs together, and we, it was the zakah, the challahs, everybody in the building, and we made an Erev Chateris. But they were my challahs. I wanted to eat them for Shabbos. What's the big deal? You can eat them for Shabbos. The Mishnah says the Beferish that as long as we're kind of the Erev Ben Hashmashos, so then you're allowed to eat it even during the course of Shabbos. That's not a problem. The Poskim say that you have to be careful that if you make early Shabbos, so you shouldn't eat the Erev for Friday night. Because the Erev, it doesn't really take effect until Shabbos actually starts. If you'll make it in Shabbos an hour before Shabbos starts, and you eat the Erev, that's going to throw into question the validity of the entire Erev. That's what the minig was in many places, that they would make an Erev with challahs. They would eat the Erev for Shabbos lunch. They didn't eat it on a Friday night. That's where the minig came, the Erev Tavshilin as well. It's a very, very strange minig that many people have, to eat the Erev Tavshilin for Shalshuns. Eat the Erev Tavshilin on Friday night. So they didn't want to eat the Erev Tavshilin on Friday night because they were afraid people shouldn't get into the habit of eating Erev on Friday night. Because if you eat the Erev Tavshilin on Friday night, next thing you know is you're going to eat the Erev Chateres. Because they're out to the Erev Chateres. And if you eat the Erev Chateres on Friday night and you made Shabbos early, so the whole Erev will be no good. So therefore they pushed it off till the daytime. So why don't you eat it at lunch? Why did it push the Shalshuns? Nobody knows the answer to that question. People like a filter fish better, which I have no idea why. That's a minute in many places. But the folks can point that. You can have a lechachil, you can have it at lunch also. It's fine. Anyway, getting back to the story. So that idea that Shabbos, Hob, Hutra, once the Erev started, it was okay. So the Gemara says that's only true for the Bax and Matas. That's not true for the Mechitas. That Erev Lechud and Mechitas Lechud. That we don't say Hob, Hutra, Mechitas. So let's say the Erev falls down in the middle of Shabbos. You don't say, well, it was up when Friday night started, so it's okay. You still carry it. Not at all. The din is that if the air falls down, if you know that it fell down, you're not allowed to carry. Whether you should or shouldn't tell people, or it's going to be people going to listen, not going to listen, that's already a whole other sugya. But if you personally know the air is down, about you're not allowed to carry. If you know that somebody ate the matzah, then you can continue to carry.
The last where the air is heated Friday night, closing the gate, wasn't there.
No, I'm saying that in theory, before I refuted what I said, is that maybe we could have instructed the Goyim to leave the gate closed right when Shabbos starts for a little bit, and then if they want to open it up later, that's fine, because hold that it started out the heter. So the mice, it doesn't work.
So that's why, even at night, not
yeah, that would be true. If the Erev was, that's okay. That doesn't matter. Yeah, mechitza nasta b'shabbos is still a kosher mechitza.
Why
is it called that? I didn't say it's mutter for me to open and close the gate. It's what's called mechitza materis. You're not allowed to make even a temporary mechitza on Shabbos. You're not allowed to make it if it's accomplishing something. If I just throw up a blanket somewhere in the middle of nowhere, it's not accomplishing anything, then it's okay. But if it's accomplishing, if it's changing some halachic status, that's what's called in halacha mechitza hamateres. It's a mechitza either to build an erev or to build a sukkah for some kind of a religious purpose, and that would be a problem on Shabbos. So I'm not allowed to make that mechitza on Shabbos, but if it was made, it would probably still be okay to use. Right?
So that means don't have fire
going
on Shabbos.
This is a very complicated Mule Yaakov Shabbos because it's there are bonim, there are bonim, mitzvah, there are a lot of factors that go into this. So lemaisa, I just threw that out as a even though I knew it wasn't going to work, so I just threw it out for the lumbus purpose. So lemaisa is not going to work. The whole ace is not going to work. So what can we possibly do? So here there's a major machlekes haposkim. Maybe this area is okay anyway because maybe that's not called the pirza. It's not called the pirza. Tremendous pirza, 50 amos wide pirza. And there's no Tirzah Pesach. Well, maybe I don't need the Tirzah Pesach here. You know why? Because I have a door. Now, granted, the door is open right now, but the door comes and goes. So maybe it's almost like a Kavachayim from Tirzah Pesach. What does a Tirzah Pesach mean? A Tirzah Pesach is a make-believe doorway. That's what it is. The Tzvich Pasha. Mezuzah, but Mashka from top. So if you make a hocus-pocus make-believe doorway, so the Halacha says that either the doorway is closed in and you're allowed to carry. So maybe just as there's a Halacha that Tirzah Pesach is good, maybe a delos is also good. Maybe the sitcha did that a delos would also be acceptable. Where would we have a source for such an idea that a delos, that a door, is acceptable as a mechitza? If the door is closed, then of course it's acceptable as a mechitza. But if it's open, how do you know that's acceptable as a mechitza? If there's a door frame, that's a door to Pesach. But in these gates, for the parking lots, there's no door frame there. So where does it say in the Gemara anywhere that a door in and of itself, the fact that the door could close, that's considered to be as if it's serving as a mechitza, even though right now it's open. So there is a sugya, the last of the Mamakomos, it's a Mishnah in Masechet Erev and Daf Chabezim and Aleph, because that's what we spoke a little bit about in the morning, about Tasei Biros. The Mishnah says that if a person is going Aliyah L'Regel, So they had a big problem. They were going to visit the Beis HaMikdash. They would camp out on Shabbos, and they couldn't feed their animals because the water was in a well. And inside the well was a Rishus HaYochid. It was surrounded by walls, the walls of the well. And the person on the outside can't go down, can't draw the water from the Rishus HaYochid out to the area of Rishus HaRabim. So the Mishnah says, the Chazal said, what you can do is you make this sort of like makeshift mechitzas. You put up a little partition over here, a little corner over here, a little corner over here, all four sides. You make these little corners, and sure, and that's good enough. That's what's called pasi biros. So comes the Mishnah and says, "Review the oimem hayadach which is around us the kasa nisaken l'tzadim v'cham omem enot tzarich." That what if there's a thoroughfare, there's not a highway, the derech harabim is going right through your pasi biros. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's not acceptable, and the Chum says it's still all right. Remember from the morning we said this is a machlekes atanoim whether we apply the principle called asi rabim or mevatli mechitza or not. Do you say that a mechitza that's being trespassed by a rabbi walking right through the mechitza, that's mevatel, that revoked, that cancels the mechitza? That was Rabbi Yehuda's view, and the Chum said no, there's no such din. So the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Elazar Damri Chavayu kanu diacha kerchen shabechitzos. This statement of the Chachamim, that you don't have to move the highway, you don't have to move the Pasi Biros. You could have a million people walking right through your Pasi Biros, and that's okay according to the Chachamim. So Rabbi Yechon of Elazar says, from here we derive just how powerful mechitzas are. Mechitzas are unbelievable. It doesn't matter if a million people walking through them and they're still okay. That was the Chachamim, the Amoraim speaking with Das the Chachamim. Yes, the Gemara Kanus Firula. Is that true? That's what Rabbi Yechon of Elazar really held? The Homer Rabbi Bachan Rabbi Yechon. Yerushalayim u'molid al-sosen u'los b'layla chayavad alev b'shem Rishus HaRabim. Rabbi Yochanan made a statement that Yerushalayim happened not to be Rishus HaRabim for a very, very technical reason. Why is that? Because the gates were closed at night. The doors of Yerushalayim happened to be locked at night. But if not for the fact that the doors of Yerushalayim were locked at night, if they would have mamash been open at night, so then Yerushalayim would have been a mamish Rosh Hashanah. It would have been a Rosh Hashanah Diraisa. That was Rabbi Yochanan's statement. Wait a second. How could that be true? You have walls, and you have Tzuras HaPesach. Just envision what the gates of Yerushalayim. I mean, it's the gates and the walls that we're familiar with are not exactly the same ones Rabbi Yochanan would talk about. The ones that we look at today are the ones built by the Turks a couple hundred years ago, but still the same imagery. That if you have a gate, so then you're going to have by definition, you're going to have a Tzuras HaPesach there in the olden days. So what did Rabbi Yochanan mean? That the only thing that saved Yerushalayim is the fact that the doors are closed at night. But if the doors wouldn't have been closed at night, then we would have had a big problem. What would have been the big problem? You have a Tzuras HaPesach. So the answer is, but people walk through the Tzuras HaPesach. So that means Asi Rabu Vatli Mechitza. So we ask the Gemara, how could Rabbi Yochanan before say Kana Diacha Kechet Shem Mechitzas? Mechitzas are the greatest thing in the world. They can encircle an area, even though there's traffic walking through them, and we're not concerned with Asi Rabim Vatli Mechitza. Rabbi Yochanan himself said that Chayav L'Mishus HaRabim, that Asi Rabim on the Vatli Mechitza. He was says, you're right on the Kan below Spirit Light. When Rabbi Yochanan said, Kana Diacha Kerchen Shem Mechitzas, he meant the Tanoim in the Mishnah, the Chacham said how great Mechitzas are. We have it not told that way, but they tell that Mechitzas are the greatest thing in the world. But Lalacha, we don't accept that. So when all the dust settles, Rabbi Yochanan sides with Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. That's the bottom line. Rabbi Yochanan personally sides with Rabbi Yehuda. That's what we mentioned in Kol Hamavos this week. That's probably why most of Rishon Paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. That's how we follow the halacha, that there is a concern of Asi Rabim Vatli Mechitza. But the one part of this sugya that becomes relevant for us is that cryptic statement of Rabbi Yochanan, the delosos to dos balayla. Somehow closing up the doors at night solves the world's problems. What does that do exactly? What does doors have to do with anything? We're talking about walls. We're talking about Tzuras HaPesach. How can Rabbi Yochanan throw doors into the equation? So there was a major machlokes between the Chasam Sofer, the Chazon Ish, what the significance of doors are. Not walls, not Tzuras HaPesach, just doors themselves. So the Chasam Sofer has a chiddush that a door is an automatic mechitza, whether it's open or closed. If you have an area that has a door there, you have a gate there that could be closed, even though right now it's open, and it happens not even to be a Tzuras HaPesach connected to it. It doesn't matter, just the existence of the door, that in and of itself qualifies as a new halacha of Hilchos Mechitzas. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about. To which the Chazon Ish responded, doors are not the Mechitza here. The Mechitza is the wall. The Mechitza is the Tzuras HaPesach. Why do the doors make a difference? Because when you close the doors, so that blocks the traffic. So since you have the ability to close the doors, and you do every once in a while close the doors, even though it's only at night, since those doors sometimes block the traffic, that's called lo asi rabba va'al mechitza. When do you say asi rabba va'al mechitza? That's when you have traffic not 24/7. There's no stopping these millions of people from walking through. But if you have a mechanism in place to stop the rabbin from knowing, so that's the role of the law. So the chazan just says, a delos is not a mechitza. When it's closed, of course it's a mechitza. It's no different than any other solid wall. But when it's open, no, says the chazan, a challenge, 105 lot of air in, where does it say that a delos is a mechitza? This is the only gemara. The gemara doesn't say anything about this. So this is a major mechitza. It's a place from the chazanish. What's the din? Is a door, a gate, in and of itself, considered to be a mechitza, even when it's open, or no? So if we try to follow the chazanish on this, that we're not so quick to say that a door is called a mechitza, we're back to square one. And the only way to solve this problem of the opening was to make Mamsha Terus HaPesach. So I'm still waiting for them to show me the pictures and send me, see whether it's feasible to make a Terus HaPesach. So the basic halachas in terms of Avon all play out of this one small shaila, namely the requirement of Omer Berulapar, the requirement that you can't have a Pirtz of Yud. We had a Machlekes Acharonim, whether the Pirtz of Yud is a Din Derais or a Din Derabbanan, but it doesn't really make a difference from Isa for us now. Then we had the Mishnah Haven, the Beit gives us the possibility of rectifying a Pirtz of Yud with the Terus HaPesach. Then we raise the Shaila, is there any other feasible way to rectify this issue? So according to Chassam Sofer, having just the mere existence of a gate solves the whole problem, where the Chazish would be a problem. I remember one time I had the Shaila in California, in my in-law's house, so they had a gate, like you press from the inside, you're coming in, you press, you click it, open up the gate. Well, I used to, even though there was an Erev in the whole community, but whatever, those who didn't want to use a communal kind of an Erev for other technical reasons. So I used to carry in the front yard, the backyard, because the whole area in the back was all surrounded by walls, and the whole front was surrounded by gate. The only thing was, there was a small opening to walk through, but that was less than 10 amas, that was for sure okay. But then there was a big opening for the car to come through. So the gate was always closed on Shabbos. It was never a problem, so I used to always carry there. One Shabbos, Mary Yaakov at the time, I think was about a year old, and he got his hands on the clicker, and he pressed the clicker, which opened up the gate. And I think the way the system was, it would not close until a car came on and tricked the sensor to think that it was now ready to close. The bottom line is when you press the clicker, unless you click it again, unless you drive over it, it's going to remain open until the other board. So kach opposite, it remained open for the duration of Shabbos. And I got a little nervous. I want to know, can I now bring a chair out to the front yard, to the back, bring a safer out? Is this area now have a piercer to it? That's more than 10 amas. So I went to go measure. So I measure. I allowed to measure on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, at the end of Shabbos, I'm up on mitzvah, you're allowed to measure. For halachic reason, you're allowed to measure. So I started to walk and count my footsteps to see just about whether it was 10 amas. It was a very, very close call whether it was 10 amas, depending on whose shear of an amas you're going to use for this. And then I was thinking to myself, well, it has a gate, back and forth. I probably didn't carry that shayla, I don't remember anymore, but that shayla that we had in California was the same shayla here. The fact that the gate was closed when Shabbos started is irrelevant, because the Gemara says that we paskin, you don't say hova hutra hutra by mechitza. So again, so some of the ABCs in terms of pirtzis play out here. Remember, just as a conclusion, a little bit different service. So I remember Rabbi Willie once said to me that just as in Echaz Erevin, there's a din of Omer Melaparetz, and you can't appear to more than Yud. The same is true in terms of Avedis Hashem. That, we all have down, and everyone has bad days in Avedis Hashem. Everyone has coupons in life, and things are not always up to par. So he said, as long as it's Omer Melaparetz, as long as for the most part, you're more up than you are down, so that's good. And even those days when you're down, the days can't be too long. You can have a day here and there, but if it starts to become a whole week, a whole month, a whole year, even if in the global scheme of your entire lifetime, it's a small portion, but if it's a Pirtz of Yud, that's a problem. So you have to be careful about two things. Make sure that overwhelming majority is good rather than bad. And even in the tough days, make sure it doesn't get too bad. The tough days don't stay for too long. Shouldn't be a chashash or a prayer.
That the
prayer
says,
well,
because
it's still called the Pesach. So you have to wait till the morning for that. So that's going to be part of a fuzzy ethical question.
What's the secret?